Sometimes a whistleblower does everything right. He or she makes a revelation that is clearly in the public interest, the revelation is clearly a violation of the law, and then he or she is even more clearly abused by the government. It would be great if these stories always had happy endings. Unfortunately, they don't. I'm John Kiriakou. Welcome to The Whistleblowers. Today, we're going to tell you about a bona fide hero. David McBride is a former British Army officer and a lawyer with the Australian Special Forces who blew the whistle on war crimes committed by Australian soldiers in Afghanistan. After failing to raise a response through official channels, McBride shared the information with the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, which then published a series of major reports based on the material. The ABC broadcast in 2017 led to a major inquiry that upheld many of McBride's allegations. Despite this, however, ABC and its journalists themselves came under threat of prosecution for their work on the story. McBride himself was prosecuted for dissemination of official information. We'll tell you more about that in a moment, but let's go back a few years. David McBride is a seasoned attorney. After studying for a second law degree at Oxford University, he joined the British military and eventually moved back to Australia, where he became a lawyer in the Australian Defence Forces. In that role, he had two tours in Afghanistan in 2011 and 2013. While on deployment, McBride became critical of the terms of engagement and other regulations that soldiers were working under, which he felt were endangering military personnel for the sake of political imperatives determined elsewhere. By 2014, McBride had compiled a dossier into profound command failings that saw examples of potential war crimes in Afghanistan overlooked and other soldiers wrongly accused. His internal complaints were suppressed and ignored. McBride's reports also looked at other matters, including the military's handling of sexual abuse allegations. After his use of internal channels had proven ineffective, McBride gave his report to the police, and eventually he contacted journalists at ABC. ABC's Afghan Files documented several incidents of Australian soldiers killing unarmed civilians, including children, and questioned the prevalent war culture in the Special Forces. Subsequent to McBride's disclosures, the behavior of other coalition Special Forces in Afghanistan also came under sustained investigation. In many ways, McBride's reports went further than the issues identified by ABC. Amid prevalent rumors that Australian troops were responsible for war crimes, questionable deaths in Afghanistan had led to calls for investigations. In November 2020, the Brereton Report was finally published, utterly vindicating allegations by McBride and ABC. Judge Paul Brereton found evidence of multiple incidents involving Australian personnel that had led to 39 deaths. Among his recommendations were the investigation of these incidents for possible future criminal charges. We'll talk about what happened next with our guest, David McBride. David, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, John, for having me. It's an honor.
Now, the honor is mine. I want to start with the bad news, David. Following your heroic actions, following the findings by the Brereton inquiry that you told the truth, the Australian government still insisted on prosecuting you. And a court decision on November 17th found that you could indeed be prosecuted. And the documents that you needed for the government to provide you for your defense could legally be withheld from your team. Just as I did in an almost identical situation here in the United States back in 2012, you elected to plead guilty to try to mitigate the damage. So what is next for you? When will you be sentenced? And do you have any idea what that sentence might be?
I'll be sentenced in March next year, 12th of March, 2024. The judge hinted at, there's no guarantees, but he hinted at something called an intensive correction order. He said he'd get me assessed for that. That means if I get that, and there's no guarantee, but if I do get that, that means I don't actually go behind prison walls but you still get a sentence of 3 or 4 years. It is on your record as a prison sentence, and you just have to comply with very stringent conditions. It's a bit like being on parole early, yes. I guess. So it will limit me. It'll be quite difficult for me to ever come to the United States, for example, when I have to fill out on my form, have you ever been convicted of a criminal offence? And I have to put down three very big ones.
There are ways around that.
Unless you've got friends in the State Department, I think I might be on a few blacklists. But which does make me a little bit sad, actually, because yes. I've got a lot of friends in the United States, like you and others. But I like to have to keep things one day at a time and don't think about that too much.
Yes.
We've said this before, but it needs to be said again. There is alarming similarities between your case and my case, and
oh, yes.
it shows a lot of big issues. Mm-hmm. And I used to, if the universe has got a sense of humor, and I think it sometimes does, I used to we used to feel a little bit superior to say, oh, well, poor old John Kiriakou, he didn't have there is no defense, in the US. At least in Australia, we've got a public interest defense.
Right.
But lo and behold, whether or not the US is controlling Australian lawyers at the moment, who knows? But the idea of a public interest defense does not exist in Australia anymore either. And I no more had a public interest defense than you did.
Absolutely tragic.
And as you said, even though the idea was an abomination to me a year ago that I would plead guilty, mm-hmm. there was really no choice. And the Australian courtroom that we faced, even though everybody was smiling and wearing wigs and gowns like it was some sort of old British courtroom, it couldn't be. There was very little difference between the security court that you faced in the Eastern District of Virginia or wherever it was,
yes.
where it was really just a Stalinist show trial,
and, oh, yes.
in the sense that not only was there no public interest defense, and the judge said, it doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter whether it's the chief of the defense force selling secrets to China, mm-hmm. Or taking bribes, or a pedophile ring within the senior officers, or cannibalism. He said, it does not matter. And that was quite shocking, but as the same has happened to you. And not only that, it's like a belt and braces for the government. Even if mm-hmm. you were trying to prove something like that was going on, not that it would help you, but we're not even going to allow you to open those documents
no,
for
see,
everybody
and,
to
and,
see.
And that's the key. That's the key is from the very beginning, they simply will not allow you to defend yourself. So I wanted to ask you if you could walk us through this mess. As soon as you made your revelations, an independent inquiry began, and it found quickly that you had told the truth and that war crimes had been committed by the military. Yet here we are with you being the only person prosecuted in this case. You said correctly a moment ago that there are disturbing parallels between your case and my case. I hoped over the last 13 years that what happened to me wouldn't happen to somebody else. But you had an almost identical experience. Tell us about that.
Yeah, no, that's right. Again, a few years ago, something like the expression that the post-truth world would have caused me to roll my eyes. But unfortunately, it's hard to see that that's not an apt expression, and that it didn't matter. It never came into... It was never even considered. It was never a factor whether what I was saying was true. It wasn't a factor whether what I was saying meant that the country was being run by criminals or wasn't
Crazy.
Properly protected. At the end of the day, my thesis was Australia is not being properly protected
right.
because the Defence Department doesn't protect Australia anymore. The Defence Department protects the government. Now, that's a pretty serious allegation.
Yes.
And you would say that, you would have thought that's an exception if, in fact, our country is not being properly protected by the people who are meant to do it. You reckon they'd want to find out whether that allegation is true. But in this very Kafkaesque thing, they would say, well, in a trial about national security, they're effectively saying national security is irrelevant.
Right. Right.
It's irrelevant. It's irrelevant whether we're, it's almost Gilbert and Sullivan. It's irrelevant whether the security services are actually doing their job or not.
Crazy.
What matters is that you didn't do your job by keeping that fact secret, you know, as if, and they really, it shows you how ridiculous it's got when I went to see the police. I've always said I'm a law-abiding person. And once I was arrested, I said, look, I'm going to tell you the full story. I didn't own up to begin with, because I was still trying to get justice. But once I could see that, you know, Brereton was on the way and there were news stories coming out and people were beginning to see that everything, it wasn't a rosy Disneyland in Afghanistan at all, and things were quite different to what we portrayed. I pled guilty, and I said, I gave the documents, and that much is true, but I was justified. And the police had interviewed me, and were very fair, I had no problems with them, but they said, they asked me this question, which they thought would sort of trap me. And they said, well, when you did your security clearance mm-hmm. and you signed off on saying
right.
You would never release anything to the media ever.
Right.
You've clearly breached that. So there, ha ha, we don't have to go any further. And I was like, no, when I did my security clearance, it was on the proviso that nothing that I, you know, it was an overarching duty to protect Australia's national security. And if I see something which absolutely goes against that, which is going to actually make Australia less safe, I don't care whether it's an official policy or not. If it is something which goes against the very values that we are meant to be protecting, I'm obviously going to do something about it. You know, it's a bit like, you know, you get those safety briefings on an aeroplane and it says, don't do this, don't do that.
Right.
Now, if you have to do something in order to stop the aeroplane crashing, it's a bit like they said some of them, I think it was Korean Airlines, where the junior pilot was too scared to tell the senior pilot they were heading towards a mountain and they crashed into the mountain. Now,
I remember that.
Whether the rule is you don't tell the senior pilot what to do, there are certain exceptions. And I never swore that there would never be any exceptions where yes. I would have to go to the media,
indeed.
Especially if I thought Australia's national security was being dumbed down. And just like in your case, this was nothing to do with my career or
This was not a serious, large
issue.
And I can attest to that. I know you. We're friends. I know that this certainly had nothing to do with your career. This was about violations of the law. And hold that thought, if you will. We're speaking with famed Australian national security whistleblower David McBride about his positively Kafkaesque experience blowing the whistle on the Australian military's war crimes in Afghanistan. David, stay right there with us. We're going to take a short break, but please stay tuned. When we come back, we're going to talk about what's next for David McBride and what he has received from the whistleblowing community. Stay tuned. Welcome back to The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. We are speaking with Australian national security whistleblower David McBride. Good to have you with us, David. Thanks for joining.
Thank you, John.
David, we national security whistleblowers, especially in the US, Australia, and the UK, all stick together. We're all friends. We all remain in touch. I'm proud to call you a friend. What kind of support have you received from the whistleblowing community and from the whistleblowing NGOs? Have they done anything to help make this experience a little bit more tolerable?
Well, there's nobody like another whistleblower. When I saw you in Sydney by surprise at the Bill Marsh tribunal for Julian Assange.
Yes.
It filled my energy levels up. I thought you were going to be appearing by video link.
Well, I had to sneak into Australia, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, yeah. That was such a joy. And yeah, I'm surprised. They wouldn't let Chelsea Manning in.
No.
And but yeah, that was such a joy. And I saw you twice and we had a bit of a laugh. What really helped me was that when you told me about doing time like a spy, I think, or maybe that was on the phone, but I'd already met you once. And because I'd met you, I feel like, you know, you're in the room. And that really helped me because you don't necessarily, well, we get each other. You worked in the business and you don't necessarily need a cup of tea and sympathy, but you do need somebody to say, yeah, yeah. Rock on.
That's right.
I did it. And yes, it is Kafkaesque because once you accept that, it does help a little bit to say, yeah, look, it's, you know, it's not fair, but don't beat yourself up about that. I like to think, and it helps me, I don't know whether it helped you, you obviously use spy analogies, but I like to use analogies from literature and the past, and you have to sort of say that, yeah, you know, in whether it's the Lord of the Rings or something, there are bad forces out there, and don't expect them to ever just suddenly get good. They're like orcs, and they're like big bats, and you take them out with the sword, and you don't have to feel guilty about it.
That's
there are just some, you know, bad dudes out there, and you got to fight them, and you just have to accept it. There's a few more than I expected, but it means the whistleblower. There's quite a, and that's where one reason I've been very lucky. You were a bit lucky in the States in that you're not the only one.
That's right.
Anymore, and there's about six of us in Australia. And that makes such a difference because the government, I'm sure they tried this with you, but they tried any kind of whistleblower, whether you're corporate or government, gets the same thing. And the media puts out, oh, he was a disgruntled, he or she was a crazy person or didn't like this.
Right.
And they can say that with me, they've tried that with me, but then there's this other guy in the tax office and there's another guy from the about the banking, and there's another guy about the police, and it starts to wear a bit thin with the public when they say, oh, we're all crazy, they were all misguided, they were so just meeting with them, and you don't even have to say that much, as we didn't with you.
That's right.
I think I have a particular bond with you because you're in the security business. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And nobody understands, you know, the military / security complex like another person. And you handled yourself with such grace and humor.
You. As have you.
And that inspires me. That makes me lift myself to your level. And they say that one of the important purposes of life is to surround yourself with people better than yourself.
That's right.
And, you know, lift yourself to their level. So I really enjoyed it. I love seeing the whistleblower program. It gives me hope. It's very slick. It's very professional. It's a good to be part of it.
David, I have to say that the government success in your case was international news. I actually learned about it in the American press, and it immediately became a major topic of conversation in whistleblower circles. Honestly, people who you know, people like Jesselyn Radack and Thomas Drake and Bill Binney, were outraged. What has the media reaction been in Australia? After the Brereton findings, it would seem to me that the media ought to be outraged. Has that been the case?
Well, there was a bit of a smear campaign in the media. They've got powerful forces. They tried to say, oh, well, now the case is over. He wasn't really about war crimes. And your summary was good. And it just as in your case, it's hard to get people that care about it, but I've always said it wasn't. War crimes were a part of the story, but they were only a part. And actually, the truth, whether or not the mass public can understand it, that, as in the torture memos, the truth is much worse than just that people at the bottom doing the wrong thing.
That's right.
The really terrible thing is that people at the top
absolutely
were encouraging,
true,
were covering up, were, and that's always been my focus. And so there was a bit with you, a bit of a roller coaster. First, you know, my reputation went down, and they were like, oh, he's not really who he says he is. And then it started to come up because I was able to come out and say, I've always been about the leadership, and I don't shy away from that. In fact, I probably got a bit more support because there's a certain amount of conservatives in Australia who, without knowing much about my case, didn't particularly like me because they sort of say, oh, you know, soldiers make it to have a hard job, and they shouldn't, you know, we shouldn't second guess their opinions back in Australia, and they thought I was some sort of bleeding heart. Now they know that, hopefully, if they've been paying attention, they now know that that's not the case. Mm-hmm. I wasn't any kind of bleeding heart. I've been in Northern Ireland, Rwanda, and various other places, Zaire, as it was then called. I've seen blood, and I'm and like you. You were an operative, you know.
Right.
But I and even the people who on the special forces soldiers who complained about other special forces, they were hardly bleeding hearts either. But they just said, there is a line, and we cross that line, it is a problem. And it's not a problem because of any namby-pamby thing, but
right,
if we start to become a criminal organisation, if we say these are the rules, but we don't follow our own rules, because it doesn't stop there.
And David, you and I, of course, have both followed the Julian Assange case very closely. We've both tried to be as helpful as possible. It's heartening that after all these years, Julian has finally begun attracting some attention from Australian parliamentarians, official Australians. Has there been much in the way of official support for you and for your whistleblowing? There have to be members of parliament who have opined that you've performed really a great public service. Has there been that kind of a reaction?
Yeah, there has. The Green Party here, who are much more than just an environmental party, and they have been very good. And we had a bit of a revolution, a genuine revolution in our politics, and like the US, mm-hmm, we really just have two parties and they're pretty much the same.
Right.
It's an illusion to think that we changed from red to blue to red to blue and nothing really changes. But in the last election, we had a whole lot of people who they called the Teals, who were sort of half green, half conservative. and they, that hence the name. And they've got the balance of power now. And they support me.
Good.
Well, I say balance of power. They can't really do anything, but
they can keep up the pressure.
Sort of they're a conscience, you guess. And they're
That's
a kind
right.
of conscience of the parliament. It would be hard for them to really put me in jail for a long period of time because they do have enough people. They don't have enough people to do anything, but there's enough people now who
keep the focus
support
on
me, and even some of the conservatives, the right wing, are now scratching their heads because the smear campaign backfired. And when some of the sort of progressives said, "Oh, he wasn't really trying to outwalk Rump; he was trying to protect bad people," some of the conservatives are like, "Oh, what? He was trying to protect soldiers who did nothing wrong. Maybe
right.
he's not such a bad guy." So there's a bit of
exactly, and you know, the bottom line is
confusion.
The bottom line is we are either our countries are either going to be nations governed by the rule of law or they're not, one or the other. And it's people like you that have ensured that we will be. David McBride, thank you so much for joining us, and Godspeed in this awful experience. May it pass quickly. The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King told us in the mid-1960s that the moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends toward justice. That is true. Justice sometimes takes years, sometimes decades, sometimes lifetimes. But right is right. David McBride is on the right side of history. The next few years, may be tough for him, but he will take his place in that pantheon of those who put the well-being of innocents above their own well-being. The world is a better place because of that. Thanks for joining us for another episode of The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. We'll see you next time.